Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is July the 26th, 1999, and in Fireside Room this afternoon is Nancy Berry's session number 99-1 called Writing Without Teachers. Let's listen in.
My name is Nancy Berry, and I'm a first-time teacher at Holden Village. I'm delighted to be here. I've had a great 3 days. And this is the first session in a series of writing workshops that I'm going to lead. And the general title of the workshop series is called Writing as Growth, Development, and Fruitfulness of Mind. I think that's what the title is. And today we're going to work particularly on the strategies and repertoires of a great writing teacher, one of the greatest in the last 25 years, a man by the name of Peter Elbow. And I'm stolen the title of his book called Writing Without Teachers. And you can begin the tape. Those tape masters in the tape booth. One of the things I think always is helpful at let me tell you a little bit about who I am and what I do. I teach writing for a living. I teach at Luther College, and I teach the typical first-year student who comes to college trying to figure out what it means to be in college and what you write there and how you write it and all of the stuff that you think of in that. I teach advanced courses in writing for students who are in journalism. My particular love of writing is in the area of creative nonfiction, which is a recently named genre for what was known years and years and years as essay writing. And that is also a genre of writing that I myself do. So I work in that field, and I also run writing workshops down at the University of Iowa in a freelance program, a program for freelance writers during the summers. A number of people enroll in workshops on all kinds of topics, and I lead those workshops on things like what is creative nonfiction or finding the structure in essays to things. I just finished a course last month on how to take a journal from personal to public, or parts of a journal from the personal to the public, a topic which I'll talk about here on Friday, I think it is. To just help us get started a little bit, it's a little bit too big of a group to go around, so why don't you we'll just do this for about 3-4 minutes. Turn to someone who's sitting next to you who you don't know and introduce yourself. Just say where you're from. Just kind of get a little bit of conversation going in the group a little bit, okay? I'm going to start with a parable from Peter Elbow's book, Writing Without Teachers, and then we're going to do an exercise. There's paper. I tell you what, let's put a pad of paper right here. And anybody who needs some paper and pen can just come up here and get it. This book, Writing Without Teachers by Peter Elbow, is in its 25th anniversary edition, which absolutely stymies me. It was first published in 1973. And when it was published in 1973, it did not receive what you would call good press. It did not receive extended press. It was not reviewed much in academic journals. People didn't pay much attention to it. Peter Elbow was a professor at an alternative school founded in the late 60s called Franconia. Let me see if I've got that right. Yes, Franconia College. He was one of the 5 founding faculty members of that alternative school. And it was a quirky book for reasons I think that'll be clear by the end of this session. Since then, the book has found a great audience among all kinds of writers, young, old, people in school, people out of school, people who consider themselves well-schooled, people who've never stepped foot in a school and never intend to. And the book had particular draw to those people who had been struggling their whole life to teach writing. And in fact, the attention that those people, the teachers who read the book and said, you know, this is the kind of book that I need in my writing class, put such pressure on Peter Elbow. They said, you know, we really love that book, Writing Without Teachers, but if I use that in my classroom, I just don't think it's good for students to have a book called Writing Without Teachers. So he produced a kind of a textbook a few years later called Writing with Power. Some of you might know that book. Well, just this past year, Oxford University Press released this with as a 25th anniversary edition, second edition, with a new sort of foreword by Elbow, which is really very delightful. This is not one of the books that's in the bookstore, unfortunately, but I'll be glad to kind of, you know, lend this for a little bit and people who want to look at it before or after a session. And let me just read you the first sentence of it, and then we're going to get started on an exercise. This is Elbow talking. It wasn't until after I wrote Writing Without Teachers that I discovered something remarkable. Everyone in the world wants to write. I was surprised that so many people, when they heard the title of my book, told me, I've always wanted to write a book. Or someday I'm going to write the story of my life. Or I need to find words for what it's like to be me and put those words on paper. Sometimes these were strangers I happened to meet who never did any writing. Till then, I had thought writing was just something that we all had to do in school, and a few special people loved doing it. How amazing to learn that everyone seems to harbor the wish. And then he goes on to say, I think a truism that all of us know, and this is it. Little children of 4, 5, and 6 write eagerly and with pleasure if they are simply encouraged to do so and help to finesse the problems of spelling and correctness. They love it and find it very easy. Almost everyone, by the time they have finished high school, comes to dislike or fear writing and to avoid it whenever possible. And yet a desire to write still lurks in almost everyone. I guess I got my title right, Writing Without Teachers. Teachers seem to play a big role in making it harder for people to write, yet they can't quite stamp out the desire. So we'll talk a little bit today about some of the strategies that he recommends to recover the spirit of the 6 or 7 or 8-year-old in us, and also to sort of land ourselves a little bit closer to what it is that the stories that we would want to tell. We're going to start with an exercise that's going to seem very strange to all of you. I hope you can see this board. We're going to do something called free writing, which Elbow is often credited with. It was a style of writing that historically many writers have used. Some people called it automatic writing. W.B. Yeats, the Irish poet, would often do this. That is to say, the writer would put him or herself in a kind of trance and allow the pen to move on the page almost with as little conscious thinking and work as possible. Then a writing theorist by the name of Ken McCrory, who wrote many books on helping students, both high school and college level, learn kind of their own style and voice in writing. Ken McCrory actually termed this phrase free writing. Elbow picks it up with a vengeance in his book, and we're gonna work on that for the rest of today and a little bit throughout the week. Free writing is very simply and timed interval of nonstop writing. And in that interval of nonstop writing, we're going to go at it for 10 minutes. In that interval of nonstop writing, the idea is to say all you can say about a subject with really without even letting your pen ever come off the page. Force yourself to push through each meaning on the page. But I thought the best way of teaching it would be kind of through its antithesis. So I thought, well, let's just pretend this is a class. And you walk in on the first day, and the teacher says, well, I want you to write, and I want to know what you have to say, but I've got these rules. And these are the rules. That whenever you write, you have to follow these rules. And these are the rules. Whenever you use the letter R, T, N, B, you have to capitalize it. Whenever you have a word that has the ing construction, I want you to underline it. If the sentence has the word and in it, no matter whether it's a question or a statement, end that sentence with a question mark. And just, you know, just to really make these rules as complicated as we can, bracket all prepositional phrases. Okay?
You can remind us what a prepositional phrase is?
A prepositional phrase is a phrase that begins with a word or, before, above, below, under, over, for, to, with, and it usually has a noun after that or an adjective because it's in relation, describing. Okay? Yeah?
My pen ran off.
Oh, here's more pens. Let's see. Here's what we do. There's pens up here. We'll put them on. Let's put them at the edge here. Okay. Let's just try it. Let's just see. And to make this even more interesting, let me give you a topic so we don't waste any time. Sort of, what should I write about? We're going to follow these rules of writing, and we're going to write about the word and thought and idea obsession.
Obsession. Do we do this as we go?
I'll let you do this as you go. Yeah. Some people like to do it after. But, you know, if you're really, I don't even know how to spell obsession, but I think that's it. I'm not a particularly obsessive speller, so I've never. So, yeah, do this as you go. For 10 minutes of writing, following these rules, write on an obsession, what it means to obsess about something, and just follow these rules. Let's go for about 10 minutes. What happened? 8 minutes of writing there. I stopped you at 8 minutes because I want to move us along. What happened? Not much? How much did you write? About three sentences. So we've got one effect of rule-bound, particularly arbitrary, spontaneously engendered rules, is that you don't write very much. What else? Anything else happen? Yeah, go ahead.
I gave up halfway through.
You gave up halfway through, right. You said
no more rules.
No more rules. Forget the rules. Yeah.
I was starting to automatically capitalize those three letters by
the end. So you did in fact, you this is the antithesis of that response. This is exactly what happens in a class. There are people who say, oh, I can't be bothered, this is silly, about all kinds of rules they say this. I can't be bothered, I won't be bothered. And then there's other people who say, well, just give me a little time and I'll get really good at it. Right? Yeah, what else?
I forgot about what I was writing when I used the free writing practice before, but all of a sudden I was like, gosh, I use a lot of words with T in it. And
yeah.
I haven't used an ING word yet, and I totally forgot what I was writing all of a sudden.
Right, so then, yeah. So a layer of obsessiveness about the conditions under which...
No.
Yeah, in the back there.
I was so, like, bound to the fact that you wanted me to write. I thought I was just, like, to write a whole lot, but then I decided to throw out all the
right? Mm-hmm. Throw out all the rules. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was not much fun.
I don't think it, unless, some people might have had fun. Anybody have fun because they like doing this rule stuff? Yeah, in the back. Sir, did you have fun?
Well, I think I had fun. But I think I use more prepositional phrases than I need to.
Oh, okay. So a heightened awareness of what the constraints put upon you. Yeah, go ahead.
They remind me of a lot of what I hated about writing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is like what would always happen when I write a paper or something like that. It's just like, I can't stand trying to get this all correct and all the little rules and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. That the process itself becomes layered with a set of conventions and a system of thinking and writing that interferes with what it is we might have to say. In fact, you might say that the nature of writing instruction, and I mean, I agree, you may disagree with Elbow's premise that writing, which starts out as a keenly creative and intellectually fruitful activity for children, becomes a source of great frustration and fear and anxiety by the time we reach about age 18 or 19. My experience teaching first-year college students is that's very true. Very few of them, even those who have been very well-schooled and very successful, start college believing in those abilities and trusting them. There's just a tremendous amount of anxiety that they have about expressing themselves on paper. And what causes that? I would say it's layer upon layer of what first are a series of rules and conventions of grammar and usage and spelling, but then I think the layers get a little deeper. The layers get a little thicker with, well, what kind of a paper am I supposed to write? And is there a structure I'm supposed to use? And is there a certain way that if I were just a little smarter and a little quicker and a little better, I'd tap into that and this would be easy? Right, so I guess I echo that. Anything else anybody wants to say about this? Yeah.
I felt like I needed to choose between the rules and the free writing.
Right.
I used a technique called hot penning before, which I guess is sort of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Say that word again.
Hot penning.
Right.
And I couldn't do. I had to choose.
Where is that? Who wrote that phrase? Hot penning.
I don't know.
I've not heard that, but I think it's a similar thing to what we're talking about here. Okay, now we're gonna move on to a more pleasurable spurt of free writing. But before that, I want to read you a parable that Elbow composed here. Once there was a land where people felt helpless about trying to touch the floor without bending their knees. Most of them couldn't do it because the accepted doctrine about touching the floor was that you did it by stretching upwards as high as you could. They were confused about the relationship between up and down. The more they tried to touch the floor, reaching up, the more they couldn't do it. But a few people learned accidentally to touch the floor. If they didn't think too much about it, they could do it whenever they wanted. But they couldn't explain it to other people because whatever they said didn't make sense. The reaching up idea of how to touch the floor was so ingrained that even they thought they were reaching up, but in some special way. Also, there were a few teachers who got good results, not by telling people how to do it, since that always made things worse, but by getting people to do certain exercises, such as tying your shoes without sitting down and shaking your hands around at the same time. Elbow says, this is the situation with writing. We suffer from such a basic misconception about the process of writing that we are as bad off as the people in the parable. That is to say, most of us really learn to write on the assumption that you study good models and readers point to all the things in the good models that you should emulate, and that somehow that process will result in your sort of doing those good models. And in fact, this is basic to writing instruction of the European model. In France, for example, there's a book called The French Boy Learns to Write, in which that was, imitation was it. The French were simply given a series of supposedly classical essays, and literally children just spent their days copying them, word for word, because the notion was if you copy, that somehow that process will enable you to discover those rules. Elbow, other writers, Natalie Goldberg, we'll talk about tomorrow. I think virtually many writers who practice the craft regularly, and that's a corollary to this. So what's the difference between a writer and a non-writer? What's the difference between a successful writer and an unsuccessful writer? The amount in which they're willing to practice and engage in the craft. It's not special magic. It's not people who somehow have access to a special set of words and sentences and rhythms. It's none of that. Writers are those who are willing to engage in the craft and in the practice on a consistent basis. A writing life is not a published life. It's a practice of writing that you sustain over time that will lead to a body of work which is yours and yours alone. That's what it means to have a writing life. Some of it will reach publication, some of it won't. It's more a matter of what you choose to do with the writing than it is some special code or set of permission or anything else. Okay, so, well, what do you do then? If you don't do this, if you let all of this go, what do you do? Well, for 10 minutes, and for those of you who, like myself, wanted to say something about obsession but couldn't, as I said here, this is, I just want to read this from you. Now, there's an obsession, sort of named an obsession that I don't like to think about, whatever it is. Damn these T's. I'm the teacher. Why did I pick the letter T to capitalize? I can't say a damn thing. One stupid page of writing, this is all about these rules, and I still don't have them right. That's kind of a closure on that exercise. Let's go for 10 minutes in which you really do push the pen on the page. Try not, and don't worry about any rules. Don't worry about spelling. Don't worry about complete sentences. Don't worry about what it is that maybe you shouldn't say. Don't worry if it sounds like a digression. Elbow recommends that even if you run out of ideas, literally you find yourself on the page not knowing what to do or what to say, rather, just repeat the last word. Or as a mantra, kind of put in, what am I saying? You know, what should I write? Push yourself to keep the pen or pencil on the page for 10 minutes of nonstop writing and let whatever comes out willy-nilly come out. If you want to continue writing on obsession, by all means use that. If there's another topic that's on your mind that is actually what the obsession is or that is kind of weighing heavily on you today, put that at the top of the page and write from that. But let's go for this for 10 minutes, okay? Free writing. Completely to feel right is free writing is that it feels like you're... It's a particularly apt metaphor for holding. It feels like you're hiking uphill. In that it really, when you're doing an interval of nonstop writing, you should feel a kind of energy sort of pushing yourself to get out whatever's inside on the page. And that just as when you're hiking uphill, you know, you've got to kind of collect the energy to keep yourself moving forward because your natural inclination is to just stop and rest and take a breath. Free writing, really, if it's going to be productive for those 10 minutes, has got to kind of have this exertion to it. In one way, it's completely undisciplined. You get to say whatever you want, however fragmentary, misspelled, unconstricted it might be. You get to say whatever you want, but you got to keep pushing yourself to find the words. Here's a couple of exercises that I'd like you to do just to sort of take a look at what you've got. The first thing is I don't want you to count words, but I would like you to count pages. Count how many pages you wrote in 10 minutes. Just count them. Just see, you know, kind of get a sense of how much you wrote and compare it to what you wrote before. Okay, another thing to do as you're sort of taking stock of it, find a place in the writing where you were completely startled by what you said, where you found yourself with some words that you're not certain where they came from. You were just surprised by them. Thing to look at as you're going through the writing is what do you think is just a place where the energy in the writing just seems to kind of rise up off the page? That is to say, is there a place not so much where you were surprised or startled, but there's also either a word or a phrase or a sentence, an idea where you just thought that's something. I whatever's there, there's some energy connected to that, and I wanna mine it further. Now suppose you were to take that phrase, one of those places in the writing, which I like to call center of gravity. This is a phrase that Elbow uses in the workshop method, but I've kind of have turned into a way of talking about writing that applies to different parts of the process. Suppose you were to take that place, I call it a center of gravity because, first of all, it suggests that even though writing exists as a two-dimensional thing on the page, there's energy there. There's energy. It's intellectual energy. It's physical energy. How many of you, when you were writing nonstop for 10 minutes, how many of you had your hand hurt? Okay? It's physical work, writing. It's labor. And it's not just labor of the hand, it's also labor of the mind. And because of that, it's sort of like a, I don't know, a metaphor here, maybe a gestalt field. It's when we get stuff on paper, I like to think of it as words that are spread out over a field. And certain of those words kind of rise up and seem to draw us back to them. It's like they are a magnet. It's like they are kind of a gravitational pull for our mind, where we're thinking, oh, I got more to say on that. Something there I didn't know I knew, but it's worth thinking about some more. So take one of those words or phrases or fragments of a phrase and put it on the top of a blank piece of paper. So you've got lots of stuff. And then you select from it, call out either an idea, which you need, sir, paper. Where's the paper? It's up there. I have to wing it down here. Talk about the center of gravity. Oh, there we go. Pencil.
Yeah, I got pencil.
Okay. So you're looking for a place where, and it's your energy. It's not anybody else's energy that's connected to it. It's just yours. So lift it out of the free writing spurt or episode and put it at the top of a page. Okay. If we had more time, if this were a 2-hour or 3-hour workshop, but I mean, I encourage you to do this on your own. If we had more time, we'd do it right now because I'd want to keep the energy moving in that way. What I would suggest is another 10-minute interval of nonstop writing. Okay? We don't have the time to do that together, but I would encourage you sometime between now and tomorrow, whether you come back to the workshop tomorrow afternoon or not, you give yourself the chance to explore again, okay, with a 10-minute nonstop interval of writing. This strand of language that now has become a kind of focus point for you. But you do the same exercise. You discover all you have to say in a 10-minute period. Okay? So that's kind of a homework thing if you're in the mood for an assignment. Anybody have some responses to this? Comments, things that you learned from it. It's quick, I know, but things that surprised you, things that you want to kind of throw out into the circle here about what it means. Yeah, go ahead.
When you gave us the assignment to choose something that was a startling thought, it was like, oh my gosh, because I picked it out, and then what I wrote below it was, that's a scary thought.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. How did you know I was
going to
write something
that is
startling?
Right. Well,
does everybody just do that?
No. Anybody else have something to say about this startling thing? Yeah.
I guess it really struck me that what I ended up writing about was how much I hated writing.
Yeah. Yeah. And which is maybe what you didn't think you were going to write about. Is that part of it? Right. I don't know whether everyone writes startling stuff, uncovers startling stuff. The person we'll talk about tomorrow, Natalie Goldberg, her repertoire of prompts is really designed to get you there very quickly. I think every free write's different. I mean, I think that our energy takes us in different places with language on different days. But the theory behind this writing practice is that we do not know the meaning that is inside our mind on any topic. The language is how we discover what we know. We do not write, I mean, this is sort of giving it out there kind of in a capsule form. We do not write from knowledge. We write toward knowledge. We do not write from knowledge. We write toward knowledge. And as our mind sort of floats in this reservoir. That's why this poet, this book is in the bookstore, Writing the Australian Crawl. This is William Stafford, who is a poet of the Northwest, by the way, an Oregon poet, great poet, who has written a lot about the practice of writing. And William Stafford calls this book Writing the Australian Crawl because his metaphor is you float in language as you float on water. That if you let the body float, it will. And the language will support you just as water will support a body, provided you don't flail, provided you don't panic, provided you don't, you imagine yourself, provided you don't imagine yourself struggling against the water, but immersed and moving with the water. So he uses this whole metaphor as writing the Australian crawl as a way to say the meaning, right? The meaning will appear to us through language. And more often than not, it will startle us with how deep it goes, how frightening it is, how true it is, and this is Elbow's point particularly as well, how authentic it is. How authentic it is, right? Anything else anybody wants to say about this practice right now? Yeah, go ahead.
The question, if you have a running task before you, what's the relationship between this exercise and addressing the task?
Yeah, okay. Well, let's talk about that for about 5 minutes or so. And then there's another session in this room at 5 o'clock, so we're going to have to be kind of mindful of the time. So I'm going to start on that, okay? This is the paradigm that Elbow and Goldberg, another writer that I particularly is useful on this, Julia Cameron. Anybody know Julia Cameron's book, The Artist's Way? Julia Cameron has a similar exercise in which she says what you do is you start with writing pages, three writing pages a day. She doesn't do it as intervals of time. She does it as a spatial thing. You've got to fill up three pages, and you've got to do it every day, three pages a day. And the premise is the same, which is that at the start of a writing project, whether it's self, right, whether it's self-defined, or we'll use this word, school-defined. I mean, most of us here are not in school, but it's our office, it's our task, it's some other institution or body of people have said, you know, I need you to write on this. Wherever it comes from, the theory behind this is that the first thing that has to happen is that the writer has to generate material. We're the ones who have to generate material. And non-stop writing, free writing, three pages a day. This is a great thing about Peter. The reason I love Peter Elbow, he's one of my heroes, because he didn't do very well in school. He went to graduate school twice. He flunked out of Harvard. He struggled a tremendous amount to sort of figure out what kind of an intellectual he was going to be. When he finally went back to school, he said, this is what I did, because he'd not been a very strong, he'd been to great schools, but he'd not been a very extraordinary student. And so he said, I set myself personal deadlines. If I had a 20-page paper by Monday the 15th, I insisted I produce 20 pages to have in hand by Monday the 7th. This is when I finally learned to force myself to keep on writing, even if the writing was terrible. That was the only way I could get 20 pages. Second, I started writing notes to myself when I noticed something going on as I struggled to write. So the principle behind this sort of way of writing is that you generate material and you generate lots of it. William Stafford says, you got writer's block? Lower your standards. You got writer's block? Lower your standards. Generate material. And when you generate material, what you want is your subconscious, your unconscious, your right brain. I mean, there's all kinds of paradigms out there to explain the part of ourselves that we're trying to tap into. But the energy is the energy of creation, right? It's the energy of creation. It's not the energy of a finished form. And the theory behind this as a writing strategy is that the more we let in all of the intellectual apparatus that helps us get the finished form, the editor, the teacher, the scholar, the doubter, that's not a good idea. Why? How could you say such a thing? Is that true? How do you spell obsession, right? All of this, which is necessary to get something in a form that other people can read and appreciate, if all of that enters in to this part of the process, we stop whatever it is that we might discover about what we have to say. Right? So that's the philosophy that I'm going to try and suggest over the course of this week. Is that the first job of any writer is to figure out how much and all that I have to say. And then, as the process moves forward from rough to finished, we let in different voices, a lot different intellectual masks and mindsets to help us push this forward. And the crucial one here is readers. And readers who will read not to doubt and not to correct and really not even to judge or evaluate, but who will read to believe, who will read to listen and be attentive and be startled and to tell the writer where it is in this material that their energy came alive and picked up and was receptive. Okay. Any questions now? Zach, did that answer your question?
Yes, it did.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I have a hard time moving to that other word, finished.
Mm-hmm.
And it has helped me these last years to realize that I'm kind of the rough writer.
Mm-hmm.
Not writer. And Julie, who works in the same place I do, and Carolyn, they are wonderful editors. So when I write an article for a newsletter, or if I just write a letter, Julie says, remember, Roy, less is more.
Mm-hmm.
Julie, you make it less.
Mm-hmm.
I know you will. You can edit me. Mm-hmm. I trust you. And so to let someone else do the finish. I mean, I would have got a lot better grades in college if I would have let someone else do that.
Well,
if I could have cheated that way, I would have.
Yeah. See, I like to, that's a very fair remark, which is to say that, just as we said, some right-brain people, there's some left-brain people. There are some artists who can start half a dozen projects with such brilliance and creative energy, but never somehow take them to closure. That's a very legitimate response as well. Wouldn't it be best to just figure out what you're best at, and then just sort of have other people enlist their help to push the thing through its way? I guess, like you say, in college that's not allowed. And I like to think of it for me, because I'm that way too. I'm a terrible editor. I mean, people don't believe this. I teach college. I teach first year college. I'm a terrible editor. I'm a terrible speller. I don't even care that much about it. But I have decided that if I'm ever really going to be a writer, I've got to get better at those things that I don't fall into naturally. So I like to think of it as different parts of my brain that I'm kind of tuning up to do different aspects of the process. Let me just give you some kind of things to do here. First of all, take some time to read over what you've done again. And if there's another center of gravity, put it at the top of the page and write from it. 10 minutes. And really, 10 minutes, buy a watch. It's amazing to me, I was really tired, my hand was getting tired, I thought, it's gotta be 10 minutes. And I looked at the watch, it was five minutes and 30 seconds. Oh, well, I guess I got to write more. The other thing is, pay attention, look at your free writing for digressions, and don't be afraid of them. Think of digressions as material that is there in your mind related to this topic, almost like a branch on a tree, right? That the digression is related to whatever it is that's inside of you that wants to be said on this. And whether you climb that branch or not doesn't really matter. What matters is that you recognize that it's connected to the tree and gives structural integrity to the tree. So pay attention to that. And the other thing, I guess, that I would like you to do is, this is Monday. If you're here for the week as I am, make a list of about five or six things that you'd like to write about. I call them writing projects, things that I know I want to write about or that I need to write about. I mean, one of them on my list is something that, in fact, I've got to write by the first month of the college, you know. I mean, sometimes we have to write on things. We live in a world in which people are asking us to communicate with language. So sometimes what's on our writing plate are things that we've been assigned to do. Sometimes these are self-motivated, self-selected topics, things that you know you want to write about. And then just try another thing with the free writing. Again, try to do at least two. Try even to push it to three. Because the point is that at each free writing, our brains, this is Elbow's metaphor, our brains cook and simmer so that the shape, and perhaps the center of the thing becomes deeper, more refined, more available to us. Right? I think we'd better stop now, and I think I'll leave it there. If you can't come to the session tomorrow and you keep doing the free writing stuff, find me at coffee or at a meal and sort of say, okay, so now what? All right, tomorrow we're going to kind of take another kind of prompt from Natalie Goldberg's Writing Down the Bones, and then we're going to talk about how it is that you do take, Elbow uses the word rubble. It is rubble. Don't make any mistake here. This is not art. This is free writing. This is me trying to figure out what it is that I have to say about an obsession, something that's really kind of weighing on my mind right now. Now, whether or not I want to turn it into something that I want to give to readers at some point, I can't even make that choice now. I got to just figure out, what have I got? What have I got to say? What is all I can say about that? That's where we are right now. Okay? Question?
Rubble's where you find diamonds.
Rubble's where you find diamonds, absolutely. Another metaphor that I'm thinking of because I did garbage duty today is the compost heap. The compost heap. That's what you got here. Your compost heap. Okay, thanks. Thanks for a good hour. I'll see you tomorrow.